Good morning, everyone. Sunday, April 5th, 2015, and as Len said, happy Resurrection Day. Our subject today is unreality. We're going to start first with a little bit of a workshop discussion on testimonies. We do this periodically just to think about what we're saying and what it means to others. I'm going to begin by reading something in Mary Baker Eddy, her Spiritual Footsteps, starting on page 153. And this chapter was written because someone had written an article absolutely perfectly, metaphysically, for one of the periodicals, and Mrs. Eddy didn't accept it because she felt no inspiration behind it. So Gilbert Carpenter says, "Inspiration is ever present for the taking. Mrs. Eddy has told us how to gain it. Then all that remains is one's desire for it and the willingness to refuse to adopt any other method or substitute. One must solemnly pledge to keep silent until one is able to speak with divine authority. Mrs. Eddy demanded inspiration as the source of everything that entered into the constructive life of the individual and the cause. She was like a sentinel on guard, watching to accept and approve the spiritual when it appeared and to detect and rebuke the human whenever it showed itself. Mrs. Eddy's basis was that unless God leads man, man will be led astray. Her example to the field was to teach us all to place a black mark of disapproval on everything not proceeding from inspiration. Yet she did not intend, through her rebuke, to seal up the fount of inspiration, but rather to seal up any fount that was not inspiration in order that the inspiration might flow freely." So we could certainly say in a good testimony, first and foremost, would be inspiration. You're inspired, you've learned something, you've had a great healing, you feel this inspiration to share it with others. What are some other things, marks of a good testimony?
Give a statement of what you worked with.
Yeah, that's helpful to say maybe a sentence or two from the Bible or Science and Health, maybe something the practitioner gave you, but something you worked with, because then the person that's listening to can perhaps work with it as well. Gives your testimony some meat. Now, these are not hard and fast rules. They're just perhaps guidelines. Anybody else?
How about gratitude?
Well, definitely gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Just overjoyed and want to share.
Right. Definitely. That's the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Also saying something that you learned specifically.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're not theorizing, and you're not just quoting. What Sharon said, you know, if you quote something, it's because you've been using it. It means something to you. You're not theorizing. Thank you, Day-Day. Something you've learned, you've discovered, you've been through. Then it has the ring of truth to it. Anyone else?
Maybe simple and quick.
Yes.
Not long.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. What happens when you spend a lot of time describing what you went through?
I think you lose your audience.
You do.
That's right.
And all those details are probably very important to you. I can remember feeling this way, all the different things, and yesterday I did this, and today I was doing that, and it's very meaningful to me. But to everybody else, it isn't. Keep it concise, and keep it to one testimony. Don't give me three, four, or excuse me, not me, give us, all of us, three, four. Keep it to one. If you've had several, well, then save the next one for another time. Anyone else?
Well, I think the point in the last statement was very important, and that is to consider the listening audience. You know, it's a love for truth, but it's also a love for those who found our meeting and you wanted to share something with them. So it's the unselfish motive.
Yes, so true. The unselfish motive that wants to go out and touch another's heart. Sometimes you can be sitting in the pew, wherever you are, and suddenly be filled with inspiration to say something. Other times, perhaps it's good, you know, you have an idea, it's usually good, you have an idea and come with it and maybe think a little bit about it so you don't get up, stand up, and just start talking and rambling or whatever. Keep it to the point. Anyone else?
I would just add that the attitude that makes a good testimony is one of great humility and gratitude. It's important that people don't ever get the feeling that Christian Science Healing is like, you know, pushing a button or popping a pill, whether that pill be mental or physical, but rather that it's a matter of changing thought, changing something about your life that is the healing. I'm always impressed in our textbook in the last chapter, all these testimonies, how so many of them, after a tremendous physical healing, go on to say that is really not even as great as the joy and the freedom that they felt by becoming closer to God, you know, and having so many other aspects of their life freed from fear.
Thank you, because that is true healing. And yes, you never want to get up and sound like you're boastful or you something great happened to you and to nobody else. That's just deadly. So we will go into what a testimony shouldn't be. And that's one of it, boastful, thinking that you know, I've got something great to say that I want to tell everybody. None of you, I don't know one of you that I know that's listening ever sounds that way, but just as a reminder. Well, I will share some things, you know, Mrs. Evans gave us, because we were always going over this point. And it is important because we are going out live, and many times people are listening to us for the first time. And they will either like the product and say, wow, this is great, I'm coming back, or they will say, oh my gosh, I'm never coming back here. and so I will tell you a story that I used to go to a little beach place in South Carolina called Murrells Inlet years ago, and that had a little society there. And I was going to a Wednesday night meeting. I thought it would be fun, and I invited a friend. And so, first of all, I mean, there were very few people there, and there were probably very few testimonies, but one in particular, a woman got up, and she said, and this is the truth, she said that bees flew up her pants, and that so she very, very quietly and gently dropped her drawers, and that the bees flew away. Now, I mean, I was a teenager, and so was my friend, and fortunately, we were laughing quietly, of course, not out loud, but the point being, that is not a testimony. Obviously, it is not a testimony. For my friend who was coming for the first time, I had a lot of explaining to do, as Desi Arnaz says, to try to tell him that is not really Christian Science or what it's about. Perhaps many of you probably have stories like that. So don't give something that is really not a testimony that would have happened obviously anyway, or maybe it was a good demonstration to you, but it's not testimony material. You understand what I'm saying. It's just something you can be grateful for. I'm sure she was very grateful that the bees flew away, but it wasn't testimony material. So that. The other Mrs. Evans used to talk about, and that was, she called them the refrigerator testimonies. And I evidently, there was someone who got up once and talked about something about his refrigerator. And evidently after that, two or at least one or two more people were talking about the refrigerators. In other words, it's kind of a contagion, or, you know, someone gives a testimony about one thing, and then pretty soon there are a lot of testimonies about the same thing. Think about it. Have it variety. If someone gives something similar to what you were going to say, well, maybe save it for another time. But don't give a refrigerator testimony. Anybody else?
One of the things I was trying to be careful about is not using terms like mortal mind or something that might be very not understood by a new person. A term maybe.
Thank you.
Excellent. There is a jargon that permeates Christian Science churches that just doesn't mean anything to people outside the church. In fact, a lot of it doesn't really mean anything to people in the church, alone outside the church.
Yeah, or saying things in total absolute that you have to, when you're giving a testimony, think about someone who's brand new to science. Would it make sense to them?
There's another that goes along with that. Every once in a while, I've heard, not lately, not from any of you, but long time ago, heard, well, I seem to have a cold, right? Or I experienced the symptoms of a seeming cold, or something like that. Well, did you have a cold or didn't you? I mean, if it seemed like it, I mean, what's a person supposed to think when he hears that?
You have to see how silly we could sound.
Did you have a problem or didn't you? Or did you just think you did?
Another word is animal magnetism. You throw that one out there, and somebody who's brand new is going to say, what the heck is that? It's some language to watch out for, not to use. Here again, consider the listening audience.
Yeah, I remember someone that was a stranger, you know, a guest, after a Wednesday evening testimony, saying to her friend, because someone said, several speakers said that they seemed to have this issue or that problem, that it was all this issue. And they said to their friend after the service, wow, that would have been really dramatic if they really had the disease.
Exactly.
Lost the whole deal.
It did. You can see why people go away thinking we're all a bunch of kooks. So just give it a little thought. The other is, too, that I want to mention is, you know, there's no condemnation in our church if you've had a medical experience. And if you've had a medical experience and there's been great healing, that's wonderful. There was one Wednesday night. It was a little child and the little child was ill. They weren't scientists, but the grandmother was asking for help for herself to see things right, and turned out the little boy had a wonderful healing. But with medical testimonies, very often there's no place in them in church, because the testimonies are to be about what?
Science.
Christian Science healing. Christian Science healing.
Spiritual healing.
Yeah, how are you healed in Christian Science? We want to make sure that we are clear about that. So, you know, just be careful. Think. And as was read from Spiritual Footsteps, this is in no way to get you to stop from giving testimonies. It's only to get you to think about what you're saying and to grow and to do better.
And in every situation that you have, there is a blessing. I mean, if you've got a problem and the problem gets solved through prayer, that makes a good testimony, as long as a lot of it is how you say it. If you're clear about the blessing you've received and the growth you've made and the changes that have come about in your life, even the smallest demonstration of God's care can make a testimony.
Yeah, we all know most people initially come to the testimony meetings to hear healing, physical healings. And if you have some, and even if they're in the past, you know, you can give them again, give them a little differently, because many of you have had wonderful healings. And then as you grow in science, you'll find that, you know, you have less physical healings because you're not sick anymore. But that doesn't mean you don't have things to testify or be grateful for. So this is all in for encouragement. Sometimes, occasionally, I will have to speak to someone about their testimony. And please take it in the spirit in which it is given, only to bless and to heal and to cause growth. And nothing more. It's in no way any condemnation or anything. And we're always glad people get up and testify. And if we didn't do this, I remember the last time I went, and it wasn't all that long ago, I went to was at the Westfield Church to a Wednesday night testimony meeting, mainly to see what was going on there. There were just, you know, three or four people. I think there were two testimonies. And they went on and on about their, it was a travelogue. One had been to Hawaii, she got up, I bring you greetings from Hawaii. She went on and on about that. And then the other one, oh yeah, well, a month ago I went somewhere too. And that was the testimony meeting. And a few months later, guess what happened to that church?
It closed.
So, believe me, I never like, or anyone else here, I'm sure, who has to do this, I'm Florence, anyone else, I never like to have to make corrections particularly, but they have to be, because we have to keep up a standard with God, God's standard. So
this is a pep talk.
Yes, it's a pep talk.
Nothing personal.
Yes, and nothing personal. Thank you, Lily. Nothing personal. And we love everybody, and we're always glad to hear from everybody. So. Okay, so now we had a wonderful Bible study yesterday. Thank you, Tom. For those of you who couldn't make it, you could listen to the recording. Thought it was wonderful because one of his questions, such a good thing to think about, is Jesus' last words. What did he tell his disciples, and what was he telling us? And to think about that, because it's of great import. It was a nice way to talk about the Easter story. And ours is the risen Christ, resurrection. There is no death. So we, however, will go now to Mark 9. We still have two more verses to read. Mark 9, verses 49 and 50. Do I have any volunteers? Okay, then I will call on Linda.
Okay, I'm just turning to the page. You said which verses?
The last
49.
Two, 49 okay. And 50.
Okay. For everyone shall be salted with fire, and every sacrifice shall be salted with salt. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost its saltness, wherewith will ye season it? Have salt in yourselves, and have peace one with another.
Now, what in the world does that mean?
Don't be bland.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Suzanne. What are the characteristics of salt?
Preservation.
Yes. Salt keeps things from rotting, doesn't it? And in biblical times, it was very important when they didn't have all the refrigerators and things. It keeps things from rotting. Salt. And as Suzanne says, it keeps things from becoming bland. And what did we learn about blandness? Hello. Go ahead. What was Mrs. Eddy's definition of mental malpractice?
Bland denial of truth.
Thank you. the bland denial of truth.
Blandness is indifference, isn't it? It's a lack of love. And if there isn't love, then what is it?
Mesmerism.
Yeah, it's hatred. Yeah, there's nothing in between. There's no gray zones here.
So that's why salt is extremely important. It keeps things tasting good, so they're not bland. To me, it's a sense of, yeah, liveliness, tastiness. And it enhances the flavor of things. So it brings out the flavor. So to have a little salt in you is important. For one thing, you won't rot. That's good.
it's kind of like having enthusiasm.
Yes.
You know, it's sometimes you kind of skip along your days and you're not feeling the inspiration. Well, you need to get back your enthusiasm, which means God at the center of things, and that'll... It just brings you back.
Thank you. That's a good way to put it.
And it's also don't be lukewarm. You know, you are either hot or cold. Get with it. You're either going forward.
Amen.
Yeah, this in between stuff.
No, Revelation, I will spew thee out. Thou art neither hot nor cold. So, yes.
I think another one to watch out for is it's so easy to just do things habitually. When you get into the habit of doing things, you think you know what you're doing, and then you're not listening. It opens the door for something that shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes back, I think, to Suzanne, the liveliness and the enthusiasm. And if you're never, if you wake up in the morning feeling bland, then you can take out your salt shaker and shake yourself. Pour yourself, yes.
Pour yourself a little salt.
Pour yourself a little salt. Get your enthusiasm. Don't be bland, indifferent, and tasteless. No enthusiasm. The other, salt, if you look it up, it also is they say it's essential to life. So you can see why. I mean, if we're following along these lines. If you lose your enthusiasm, if you lose your joy, and you begin to rot, well, that would put you down a wrong path. It's also, it has healing qualities, cleansing qualities.
I think a lot of times we take salt for granted, but there was a time in past history it was so valued, it was actually used as a monetary unit.
Wow.
The word salary comes from the same root word as salt.
It actually still is in some parts of Africa. They trek these huge blocks of salt hundreds of miles over the Sahara Desert or something to people who buy it. It still does go on. It's amazing, the story of salt.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
There's another one about Old England. If you sat below the salt shakers, you weren't worth anything. The people that sat above were the good people.
Not worth his salt. Not worth his salt.
Yeah.
And then what did Jesus say about salt? Ye are the
salt of the earth.
Of the earth. And if
this disciples, right?
And if this salt
has lost its savor,
yes, he speaks about it, the importance of it. So very important. You feel salty, not bland. You don't want to be over salted either. That ruins everything. But just right, just enhancing your enthusiasm is
it was kind of interesting, the origin of the word enthusiasm. In the Greek, it means possessed by God, inspired.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Thank you, Dale. There you go.
That's the thews.
Uh-huh.
I feel, I was reading and that this one of the articles that we have, and it was saying that you have to not just say you know there's no matter, you've got to really know it, and you've got to really feel it. And that made a real impression on me. It's the difference between seeing, reading it and going along with it and actually really knowing it.
Yes. Very easy to read all these things. But if you're not knowing it, and the only way you know it is to go out and live it and to be it and to change, yes, and to prove it and to, at times, if need be, take correction, change, swallow your pride, living it. You know, these people who go on and just say they're not getting their healings, well, it's because there's something fundamentally wrong. They're not living it, because if they were living it, things would change. Maybe not right away, but it'll come.
And I want to ask, sometimes I think to myself, rather than say there's no matter, isn't it more important to understand that there is no separation? Because matter, that's really what it's suggesting, that there's a symbol of separation that separates us from God or spirit. So I like to think, rather than say there is no matter, there is no separation. Do I make sense or not?
No, that's good, Len, and it is true. We don't really go around saying there's no matter, there's no chair. There's, you see what is there, which is an idea of God, the symbol, the truth of it, instead of, because that would be maybe a negative approach, going around saying there's no matter. So thank you. No, you see the truth about whatever it is you're seeing, and yeah, it's a symbol, an idea, and in truth, without material accompaniment, it will exist forever. Your body will exist forever. Your identity, all of that will exist forever. Right now, it appears to have material accompaniments. But the less you make of it, the less you think about it, the less you worship it, the more you think about, the more you're absent from the body and the present with the Lord, the less walking your body will do. It's the humble servant of the restful mind. Man is that, as Mrs. Eddy says. It'll stop squawking, but if you keep looking at it, thinking about it, pinching it, worshiping it, you know,
thinking that it has a life of its own.
Right, thinking that it is your life, that your heartbeat is your life, that your organs are your life. If you think that all the time, well, you know, you're going to have, what do you think, in belief. But if you're present with God and with His glory and seeing the good and all around and keeping the body quiet, not paying a lot of attention to it, except, of course, to take proper care of it. You should. So that's a good point. Thank you, Len.
You're welcome.
And just before we finish these last two paragraphs, I did look it up in Matthew Henry, and he said, those souls who have not been salted with the salt of divine grace will be salted with fire. So, to me, that meant if you don't keep yourself salty, happy, enthusiastic, keeping yourself from getting rotten, well, you will have the salt of fire, meaning trials and tribulations that perhaps you don't have to have if you keep yourself salty.
I had a different take on that. You know, because it says here, everyone shall be salted with fire, which means we're all going to have challenges. And it made me think that, you know, people who have had life too easy, where they've been spoiled as children, or somehow they've just had a life that's too easy, they tend not to make good Christian scientists, or good Christians for that matter.
Or good anything.
People who have worked really hard through difficulty, through toil, tend to be people of substance. they tend to have a deeper, stronger root, if you will, of appreciation for the things of God, because they've had to work through and they've had to rely on God. And they are the salt of the earth. So if you're working through a problem and it doesn't seem, you have a hard time seeing the daylight, don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. You're going to be of great use to God and to mankind. Work through that problem.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And, you know, the ones who have been through the most problems, that is true, then they end up being able to help others because they've gone through it all and experienced it and know that you can come out on the other side. So it does take perseverance. Yes, thank you.
So it's no badge of shame if you got a problem to work through. Nothing to be ashamed of. It's something to work through.
And, you know, it's true with your children. That's why you don't shield them from experiences. And they have to work through things. They're more grateful.
And stronger.
Yeah, and stronger for it. Any more comments on this? We shall bid Mark 9 a fond adieu and take with us many lessons. To use. This isn't just being talked about. This is to change your life. So now we are back to miscellaneous writing. We're on page 32. Starting with line 25, we will just read that one paragraph. Day-Date, could you read for us?
Yes, I'm sorry. Distinct denominational and social organizations and societies are at present necessary for the individual and for our cause. But all people can and should be just, merciful. They should never envy, elbow, slander, hate, or try to injure, but always should try to bless their fellow mortals.
Thank you. Okay, who would like to address that? Lawrence?
Yes, I love this really very much because, I mean, what is our purpose for living? It's to love God and to bless mankind. And so to me, this is saying exactly that. What best to do, what best to set forward as my purpose for living than just that. To be merciful, I think the merciful means so much because lately there are a few incidents where people are being beaten up and lots of people are sitting there and no one attempts to do anything. It's really made me wonder how much the laws or maybe some human laws are really stopping mankind from being merciful anymore.
Thank you. Thank you.
Interesting point.
And you know, this goes back to the Good Samaritan, the teachings of Jesus. Thank you, Florence.
And can you ever be just or merciful all by yourself without having any contact with other people?
Sure.
No. And that, I think that's the point of the first sentence. Organizations are important because that's how people meet, that's how people work together, whether it's in a job or in a church or whatever. It's people being together. And every organization we have should be a platform for expressing the Christ. And that's the whole point of having a church. We work together for a united cause.
And you put aside your pride, you put aside your selfishness, you put aside things that would come up, and you know, it stops becoming all about me, and it becomes, yes,
the greater cause.
The greater cause, the good of the cause. And that is what is so wonderful. And that is what a true church organization should be, and it's a spiritual, if it's that, it is a spiritual organization, and that this is not easy to achieve, and it's something we're always, you know, having to work on in ourselves, individually and collectively, to keep it the highest standard. But it gives you opportunities to share and to grow and to realize, you know, if you get your feelings hurt or you find out you are prideful about something, it's a good change. And change will bring the needed healing. But if you don't, then you don't. Stay where you are.
I guess it was Carpenter and said that it is nothing quite like church work to have an opportunity to get rid of your pride or whatever, to bring the humility out, which is the gold of your character, quite frankly.
Yes, it was Bignell Young. He said it very beautifully, yes. But if you want to find out what's wrong with you, just become part of a church.
Honesty.
Yeah, right. Well, and I mean, I know, absolutely true. And I would have been a loner. I would have. I didn't really like being with people because I didn't get along with them. I didn't had trouble seeing them right, and I had a huge amount of pride. And I'm telling you, Mrs. Evans just whipped me around, turned me inside out and upside down. And I'm so glad she did. And she wouldn't. I wanted to leave many times, but she said, "You're not going anywhere." And that was hard, but it had tremendous fruits. And I'm not saying you can't get those fruits other places. And I'm not knocking anything else. I just know for me, it sure worked. And I know, listening to Florence and some of you others, you've said exactly the same thing. So if you can just persevere, not take your marbles and leave.
Yeah.
So there's tremendous benefits, and everyone is loved. And
you know, there's been a lot of negative things said about organizations. But they only apply to when the organization loses sight of its true purpose. And that happens, like what Mary said, when selfishness reigns and human will wants to take over. And then that's the danger. But and then they tend to defend themselves with all these absolute statements. But the problem with being so absolute is maybe you lost your heart. That's why I love this last sentence. Should always try to bless their fellow mortals. What could be better than that? I think it sheds a clearer light on the purpose of our organization.
Yeah, and go ahead.
No, actually, I'd rather you speak first. Go ahead.
Well, it talks, too, about, you know, we need not to be so critical of other organizations or other things. And I do believe we absolutely have to tell about the foe in ambush. And the enemy is always from within. And so, with the organization of the BOD, the takeover after Mrs. Eddy passed on, she did not want a huge central organization. That truth had to be told. But in other instances, I'm a lot less critical of other types of religion, mainly because who am I to speak? I don't know anything about them. And I know the slander that has come even on our church, just slander, people who have no idea what they're talking about, or they totally misinterpret what's gone on. And so I've learned not to be so quick to say anything if I really don't know what has happened or what that organization is about, unless I'm real sure about my facts. So go ahead, Linda.
What I wanted to speak to, just listening to you guys, was really, when Jesus came back and after his resurrection, he was really coming back to his disciples, and he kind of gathered them back together and to help them move forward. In a sense, that to me was still church, and he didn't leave it till he ascended. And one of the things I took from the story was in that persecution, evil tried to scatter everyone in different directions and kind of take the unity out of the group. You know, they didn't listen to the women, and Peter denied, and Judas betrayed, and it kind of tried to break it up. But when he came back, he was sort of kind of gathering them all back together. And he didn't leave them and didn't stop teaching them until he ascended. So I don't know if that means anything.
That means a lot.
That's great.
Thank you. That certainly was my observation, too, that Jesus never stopped teaching, nor did Mrs. Eddy. I mean, she always had her household. She might have closed her large classes and things like that, but she always was speaking to those, the small group that would listen. It goes on. It's continuous. None of us, I can't imagine ever outgrowing it, especially not on this earth anyway, but there's always things to be learned. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. So this just reminded me of something that was in a lesson a while back, but this is in Science and Health, page 98. So
could you talk up a little bit?
This is reminding me of something from the lesson a while back, and we were talking about church. In Science and Health, page 98, it said, so this is Mary Baker Eddy writing, the way through which immortality and life are learned is not ecclesiastical, but Christian.
Thank you. And Christian is getting along with each other. It isn't a bunch of rules and laws and regulations. So,
putting others' needs in front of yours and helping them as best you can.
Yeah.
And Jesus never formed a church. He never organized a church. Of course, he didn't have time. But he did establish the principle upon which his church would be established. It was his famous quote to Peter. Peter correctly identified who and what Jesus was.
Yes.
And when he sent his disciples out initially, he sent them out two at a time. So they could watch each other's backs and support one another.
And the early Christian church was full of healings and wonderful things going on at that time. And it was only later when this huge, again, organization, ecclesiastical despotism, rose up and tried to control everything and dictate that it lost a lot of the original elements. And Mrs. Eddy has formed her church, and she quotes it in the manual on the primitive teachings and healings of Jesus. She goes back to that. So anyone else who would like to speak to this, thank you all who did.
I just like to say that if I wasn't part of this organization or part of a group of people that are sharing all this information, I wouldn't be here, because it's coming from the life that I was living. I had no examples of humanity. To see humanity in action means a lot to me, and I'm able to perhaps mimic that in understanding and do the things that other people do that are good and loving and caring. Having not had that before, it's a great inspiration to me to see it, to be a part of, to be at the church and feel the Christ presence that was there when I went to visit. Was pretty overwhelming for me and something I'd never experienced before, and it's keeping me persistent in understanding God.
That's beautiful.
That's
thank
wonderful.
You, Lynn. And you certainly do not mimic. You speak from your soul. And Jeremy's going to speak from his soul.
Oh, okay. I absolutely agree. I, without God sending me here, I wouldn't be here either. And I don't see any, there's no back door to it. It's here or nowhere. So I'm very grateful for everyone who kept the church going all these years and kept it right so that it was here for us now. And I certainly don't want to dismantle that for people in the future. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's one passage from Message for 02 that I'd like to mention.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mrs. Eddy is saying, the ignoble conduct of his disciples, she spoke of Jesus as a man of sorrows. And then she said, the ignoble conduct of his disciples towards their master, showing their unfitness to follow him, ended in the downfall of genuine Christianity about the year 325 and the violent death of all his disciples save one. The nature of Jesus made him keenly alive to the injustice, ingratitude, treachery, and brutality that he received. Yet behold his love. So soon as he burst the bonds of the tomb, he hastened to console his unfaithful followers and to disarm their fears. Again, true to his divine nature, he rebuked them on the eve of his ascension, called one a fool. Then lifting up his hands and blessing them, he rose from earth to heaven.
Beautiful. Thank you. That is sometimes what it takes to work together. It's never the human love, it's the divine love, and it pushes you upward, and you have to grow. So thank you.
And if that's in the heart of each one of us, there's nothing that we cannot accomplish for God.
Yeah. Well, I was going to go on, but maybe I will. We're getting close to the end, and that was very beautifully read. Thank you, Fairly. I'm going to give you a little something more from Mary Baker Eddy's spiritual footsteps. Something to think about. It concerns Easter resurrection. Carpenter says, we are told the world will be destroyed. How? By malice. And that's what Fairley was referring to and what she read. By cyclones, electricity, and be burned up. What is a cyclone? It is a condition of mortal mind, malice. What burns up? Malice. We are told, like Mount Pelee, there is an internal fire, malice, that will finally burst forth and destroy the world. It is all malice, and our textbook tells us this. Christian scientists will hold such things in check. God never made them, and they can be overcome, just the same as sickness. It is all within. This criminal instinct was evident both at the birth and the crucifixion of the Master. Yet from the Master's experience, we learn that in its infancy, the spiritual idea can and must be protected. And in its maturity, it is indestructible. People mourn over the crucifixion instead of rejoicing in the realization that it revealed the indestructibility of the spiritual idea. Mrs. Eddy felt this hidden fire of malice, but she did not fear it. In his book, Mary Baker Eddy, Lyman Powell quotes her as saying, quote, the love that is going out to the world through Christian Science is the greatest power there is, and the only thing that will change that thought. I have often felt these hard and loving thoughts of others come about me like dark clouds and seem to surround me, but they never touched me. And why? Because my thoughts were going out to them all the time in love and with a desire to help them. End quote. That goes directly with what Fairley said, and this is what we are about now, to meet the hatred of the world with the love of science, to pour it forth, to keep our purity, to know that this truth, she says here, this only science can meet these claims right now. So we will go forth with a true understanding of the crucifixion and the resurrection, to feel in our hearts as if we had seen it ourselves. Blessed are ye that
who believe and have not seen.
So we will have a joyous Easter service, and God keep you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.